Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening, and thank you one and all for being with us, hanging out with us for a little while we jabber away, hopefully, with something that makes sense. My guest tonight is the wonderful Catherine Samuelson, who's been on the show many times and lives a couple of hours from me. So we periodically actually get together for lunch. So she's a friend of the show and a friend of mine, and we're going to have a very good time. We've selected a very juicy topic, and we will get to that in just a minute after tonight's metaphysical musing. And, well, first of all, I just wanted to say, I figured out that I've actually been doing the show now for 7 years. Time flies when you're having fun. So I don't know what the exact anniversary date is, but it's been 7 years. So one of the things that gets knocked around at the moment is that this is the apocalypse. Everybody's very worried about that, and it's a word that has a tremendous emotional charge to it, and I think is totally misunderstood. Apocalypse is a Greek word, which means it shall be revealed, which is how you get the title of the book of Revelations. It also is sometimes translated as the veil will be lifted. So all it's saying is we will start seeing things that we weren't seeing before. And that sounds in its own way totally lovely. And we're supposed to be in this transition period between a couple of thousand years of darkness on this planet and going into a period of love and light that we don't even understand yet. And in this transition, we have the apocalypse, the period in which things are revealed to us. And all kinds of things are being revealed to us. We may not be real happy to see them, but they're being revealed. So I remember when a number of years ago, the sexual abuse scandals in the Catholic Church started to become public. And I was totally shocked, not because I didn't think that could exist in the Catholic Church, but because the Catholic Church is so powerful, and if it was there, it was there for a long time, and they had managed to cover it up for all of that time. Why now? Why was it showing up now? And that's true of all kinds of things. So now we've got, you know, every day there's another sexual abuse scandal. That's one of the things that's being revealed. And the whole way that we look at sexual aggression and organize our thoughts and our conversation about relationship, consensual relationships, is changing really quickly and in a very public way and a very crazy way. And there's some really strange things going on at the moment. But one of the things, as I looked at the patterns of all of these, I realized that it reminded me of something that I began to understand when I was a child. I almost said growing up in New York City. Clearly, I haven't grown up, but I was much younger then in New York City, in Brooklyn. And we all knew members of organized crime. It was just part of life. You ran into guys who were threatening people, guys who were running protection rackets on the little stores in town, the guys who, one of the big businesses that they had was the trash collection. And they ran that as a protection racket. You know, you had to pay them a certain amount of money so that nothing bad will happen to you. And to give you an idea, I actually had somebody at one point say to me, "You better be careful in this neighborhood. Do something wrong, you could wake up dead." I mean, these were people that were in your face. I met some of the mafia leaders at a summer bathhouse that somebody said, oh, you want to come upstairs and see the old timers? I have a sense of that evil. I have a sense of how they do it. And what I've been noticing is everything that is bad and wrong in the world is done exactly the same way and has exactly the same agenda. And that agenda is fear. It's getting people to voluntarily give up their life force. Sometimes that's time, sometimes it's something else. And slavery. Control. And it doesn't matter, wherever you look, whatever it is, whatever the scam is, whatever the business is, the ones that we hear about the most these days are things like sex trafficking of children, the things that are going on with refugees and all kinds of other stuff, but also the way businesses are run. The crazy stuff that's being done with the power company in Puerto Rico, they're all the same scam. They're all the same racket. What does that mean exactly? We may be able to kick that around as part of our topic tonight, because we have a big topic. And so I'm going to leave you hanging with the metaphysical musing and introduce our guest for tonight, Catherine Samuelson. Hey, Kath.
Hey, David.
So good of you to join me.
Oh, you're welcome. As I said earlier, it's what friends are for, to step up and fill in a gap.
That's right. There was someone else scheduled who's in Australia and suddenly realized the time difference or something. I have no idea what his problem was. But we often have you on the show and we have wonderful topics, and here you are again. And the topic that we chose this time, just to keep it light and simple, is the balance or the interaction of light and darkness, good and evil, on planet Earth. I figure, you know, if all the other philosophical and religious traditions haven't managed to work that out yet, we ought to give it a shot.
Yes, why not? Right. In this time of chaos.
Right. And that's kind of the point. We're at a time where everything that we're looking at is in this very stark light and dark, light and shadow intensity. And it's a time when you can look right at it and say, how does this work? What's going on here? What does this mean? Or you can just freak out and argue about the details of it. You know, did this person do this or did this person do that? And how bad is it? And what should we do about it? But under all that, there is this whole pattern. And so I'm actually curious, because you were the one that suggested this. So my guess is that you had something in mind for how to talk about it.
Well, it sort of had a couple genesis in my head. And before I forget, somebody said to me recently that growth comes out of chaos.
Right.
So we certainly have a ground for growth here. But part of this sort of appeared in my head because I've been very slowly reading this book called The Tantric Jesus by James Riho. And in it, he's talking about, you know, that you can find things that are similar in early Christianity and in Tantra. And then he's talking about Kali, who is the creator, the destroyer, you know, the void, the light that comes out of void, the void and the light kind of creating together. So, yeah, you need the dark and light balance, but I don't know that that always means you have to have a balance. You have to have evil to have good. I think they can be separate things. And the other reason this topic popped into my head. I was working an event and I was talking to someone about a conversation I had with somebody there where I just kind of went, what? And he goes, well, you always have to have the, and so in recounting this, the person I was talking to said, well, you always have to have the dark with the light. And I'm like, well, it depends on how you define dark and light, doesn't it?
Right.
So that's where this came from, David.
Okay. Yeah, there are some fascinating offhanded things that people believe and say about especially dark, and beliefs about what the light is. And I think with Hindu scripture, one of the problems is that, like Western scripture, if you don't know it in the original language with the nuances of the way the language is used, you probably miss most of it. You know, Aramaic and Hebrew and Arabic are mystical languages where everything has multiple meanings.
Mm-hmm.
The letters of the words have numbers, which then have a numerology to them. In all of Jewish tradition, in whichever language, words are intentionally used as puns. So they have multiple meanings based on the culture at the time. So we've got a language that's extremely complex, has tenses that don't exist in many other languages, and we translate that into Greek. So the first thing that happens is it doesn't have the tense which allows past, present, and future to exist simultaneously, and they put everything in the future. We've already completely screwed up the understanding of many things.
And then it gets translated into Latin and then into other languages, and there's mistranslations on top of mistranslations.
Right. And then there are political translations. So the King James Bible was a new version of the English Bible so that King James, who had been a Catholic, could start the Anglican Church and get divorced.
It was Henry that got divorced.
Was it Henry? Okay.
Yes, it was Henry. No, and the King James Bible was written by committee.
Yeah. Yeah, let's see. What do we want to do with this? Which means that it doesn't go back to the original reference in the original language. And I have my wonderful friend, Bishop Christina Rake, who is a theologian and has read everything in the original languages. And so when something doesn't make sense, I have someone I can talk to and say, what did it really say? And it's always totally different than the interpretation that gets thrown around and makes all kinds of trouble now. So
and people are interpreting it from their own belief systems.
Right. And those belief systems, most of them in the 4,000 flavors of Christianity that exist on the planet at the moment, came out of Europe a few hundred years ago. They don't go back to the original teachings. So things are very far from what was originally said about all kinds of things, but especially, you know, what is good and what is evil? How does that stuff work? What are our responsibilities in the world? There's a basic idea in Judaism of tikkun olam, which means to fix the world. That each of us as an individual is responsible to do whatever we can do to fix what's wrong. And in the Talmud, it says, you can't do all of it. And you shouldn't feel badly that you can't do all of it. But you can't not do what is there for you to do. You're responsible to do what you can. And that's a very different way to be in the world from a lot of other philosophical points of view. We're responsible
right.
for each other.
But it struck me, you know, in these conversations and reading this book, that there, when you equate the dark and light balance with good and evil, then you're sort of resigned that evil has to exist.
Right. And the
Where
other thing,
if you look at light and dark in the purest sense, it's almost like dark is the void out of which light came, and together they created the universe. And
right.
So to keep the universe going, you need that balance of that dark and light, the creation and the destruction. That is not good and evil.
That's also, and it can also be within a person.
Right.
So that nobody is purely light and nobody is purely dark. There's a balance that people are trying to strike between the two directions that you're pulled in any moment. And there are all kinds of factors that created those pulls and that continue to create those pulls throughout your life. So for an individual, can you be all one and not the other? I'm sure there are enlightened people who are pretty close to being all light, and there are some horrible people that are pretty close to being all dark. But for most of us, there's some kind of balance that we're trying to strike, and we know which direction we want to go. You know, what it is that we're trying to do in the world. But I think behind all of that is a whole other concept which gets confused with light and dark, and that's good and evil. And it's, I think, easier to define good than it is to define evil. You know, evil.
Yeah, because there's such a continuum of things.
Right. Maybe.
At what point does it turn from one to the other?
Right. But there's also the idea that there is some good which exists by itself, and things that are not whatever that is are by their nature, because they're not good in quotation marks, evil. And in the work that I do, evil is pretty palpable. And in many of the scriptures all over the world, evil has a personality. You know, even in Harry Potter, he who shall not be named. And there's a reason that his name was not supposed to ever be mentioned, because mentioning the name, especially with any kind of reverence, calls that personality and everything that comes with it. And if that were not, if that didn't have some credence, it wouldn't be everywhere. It wouldn't be there in the dark corners of all the scriptures. It wouldn't be in all of the stories that have been told for all these years, and especially the stories that we tell to our children.
Right, the scary fairy tales.
Right, right. You know, one of the things Einstein said, if you want your kids to be smart, read them fairy tales. If you want them to be smarter, read them more fairy tales. Knowing that in those carefully crafted stories with their morality tales and the conundrums that people are put in is the way that we learn how to be human beings and how to make good decisions in the world. And
right.
that you can't trust everybody.
Right.
You know,
yeah, but it goes back to my current thinking, which could, of course, change, is that we don't have to be resigned to evil as good and evil, you know, balance, you know, you have to have good and evil. It's like, why? Yes, we have to have light
right.
and dark, which is
right.
a different concept to me.
And one of the things that I'll say about that, which will probably annoy the people who have those beliefs and think that they have scriptural backing, is that the idea that there has to be darkness and there has to be evil for some balance in the universe is a lie that's perpetrated by evil, because it means that everybody in the world who holds that belief says, yeah, you exist and you have to exist. You're supposed to exist. And that evil has created all of the bad stuff that has ever happened to anybody on the planet. My sense of it is that it has a personality, and that it is non-physical, and that it gets manifested in the physical world. And all of the way that that gets manifested is variations on organized crime. It's hierarchical. It's based on fear and intimidation. And it's based on a combination of stealing things from people or enslaving them. And it's just a matter of mechanism and what the particulars are, but it's all the same scam. It's all the same game. And it's just theme and variation. It's all done the same way. It doesn't matter whether you're a terrorist or a banker who's selling loans to people who never asked for them.
Or who can't afford them.
Or can't afford them. Doesn't matter whether you are a small-time crook or, you know, you're in a position of power and doing things that a person who did not have the position of power would get arrested for. You know, all of, I don't want to get into the names of the people who are involved in sexual scandals now, but that stuff, it's bigger because the boundaries between men and women and consensual sex have been an issue throughout time. But in the 21st century, right now, in politics, it's right up there in front. It is the apocalypse of sexual consensuality. Everything is being revealed. And
possibly as women are standing up more and more and saying, no, women need to be respected.
Right.
You know, and bringing the feminine and the divine feminine back into the world.
Right. And changing the balance. Basically by telling the truth and not, and standing up to the intimidation and fear that have been used as a control mechanism, which is exactly the same way that all the rest of it gets done.
And that women really don't have full personhood.
Well, and the other threat of that in our country is that people of color don't. You know, that they don't have full personhood. And the thing about both of those is that it's intentional. It's not like it just sort of is that way. You know, there's history to it. It was done on purpose. It's still being perpetrated on purpose. And we need to look it squarely in the eyes, say, I see you. I see what you're doing. I know why you're doing it. And I won't allow you to do it anymore. It's over.
Or as in the case of the conversation I had at that event, because it wasn't the appropriate time to do anything, several days later, I sent a message through Facebook saying, I'm really curious where you heard that, because I've only ever heard the opposite.
Mm.
You know, helping to plant a seed.
Right. Let's stop right there because we're going to have to go to the break, and I want to make sure people know how to get in touch with you and very quickly what it is that you do, because it's fascinating.
Well, I am a life coach, and I do channeled angel readings using automatic writing, and I have a book called Opening the Heart Meditations on How to Be, and people can read about me at my website, which is KatherineSamuelson.com, which is KatherineSamuelson, and are at it's KatherineSamuelson.com, and my email address is KLSamuelson@yahoo.com.
Terrific. Yeah, and, you know, I love your work, and I love the book, and people should check out what you do, because it's wonderful. It's one of the reasons that we became friends and fans of each other's work. So check out what Katherine does. So we're going to be going to a break in a couple of minutes. And we'll be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. My guest tonight is Katherine Samuelson, the amazing angel reader and author. And this is David Franklin Farkas on the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. So don't go nowhere. We'll be here having more fun and solving all the problems of the universe.
Channel. Non-stop meditation music 24 hours a day in the new Empower Radio app. Music to empower your meditation, help you relax, sleep, or provide a calm background while you work. The Empower Meditation Channel is interruption-free. Listen now with the Empower Radio app, free in the App Store, or listen online at empower.fm. Soothe your soul. Calm your mind. The Empower Meditation Channel.
Wildfires burn millions of acres across the country each year. And each year, wildland firefighters battle to contain them, but they can't do it alone. For some communities, it's not a question of if wildfires strike, but when. And a single ember can travel more than 1 mile. As it twists and turns and floats through the air, that single ember can find its way to where you live and can ignite and destroy your home or your community. That single ember can be just as dangerous as the wildfire itself. You can't control where the ember will land, but you can control what happens when it does. You can take action now to prepare your home and your community for wildfire. Get fire adapted. Learn what you can do now to reduce wildfire damage later at fireadapted.org. Prepare, protect, prevail. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council. Learn more at fireadapted.org.
This is why you work so hard to pay the mortgage. Because home is more than four walls and a roof. It's that porch swing on a summer night. It's pajamas with feet and everybody over for Sunday dinner. And that old stuffed chair in the living room you just can't get rid of. This is why you work a second job. This is why you learn to fix things yourself, so you can save on repairs. Because home is your place, your memories, your family sleeping in their own beds at night. And that is why we want to help. We are making Home Affordable, a free government resource that can make paying the mortgage easier. And now even more options are available. Call 888-995-HOPE today. That's 888-995-HOPE. Or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov.
Good night, Mama.
This is why. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Getting your child home safely.
Cap your heels together 3 times.
Is just a click away.
There is no place like home.
But making sure your child is in the right seat is just one of the steps down the road to safer travels.
I don't know how it works.
Find the right seat for your little one's age and size. There's no better way to get home safely. Know for sure that your child is in the right seat.
How can I ever thank you enough?
Get all the facts at safercar.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You found Empower Radio. It's like sunshine for your soul.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Catherine Samuelson, and we're solving all the issues that religion and philosophy have not solved about light and dark and good and evil, or at least that's our joke. So, Catherine, you were telling me about the person you were talking to, the conversation that set off this train of thought, and what they replied when you asked them a question.
Well, I had said it was good to see this person, and the whole thing, and all I got back was, it was good to see me too.
Alrighty,
I thought,
then.
You know, because I had thought afterwards, you know, I can't just be silent. Because that, if you don't call people up, but I wanted to do it in a way that was respectful, that maybe would allow a seed to be planted.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, during like World War II, a lot of the evil happened because people stayed silent.
That there's definitely truth to that, and it still happens for all kinds of other situations all over the world. Well, we also have to remember all the people who clandestinely just did what they could to mm-hmm. save people, to change the circumstances, to you know, make it more difficult for the Nazis to get anything done, sabotage and all kinds of other things, sent messages,
right.
All of that stuff, which came out later, but obviously was done totally, you know, totally quietly on the side in the dark.
And I think that goes back to what you were talking about. Was it the Talmud, which says mm-hmm. do what you can do?
Right. Right. And it's a way of being in the world. You mm-hmm. know, I had the great privilege of doing what we called at the time medical missionary work, but it was being volunteers with Mother Teresa's Missionaries of Charity in Haiti. And people have very strong feelings about Mother Teresa and that organization. And some people love it and some people hate it and make up all kinds of things. But until you have been in a room full of infants who are likely to die because of how they were born, malnutrition, all kinds of other things, who have no one else to take care of them, or a hospice with the people who have no family and would die alone, or the medical clinic downtown that is the only place that people can get any kind of medical attention for some life-threatening things sometimes. And it's all being done with next to no money by volunteers in the same way in Haiti as it's done in Calcutta. And then people say, well, but she said this and she, no, on the ground, this is what's happening. And that's what matters. And until someone else is doing it or you're doing it, say thank you and send them money.
Right, because I don't think Mother Teresa would have said anything other than she was a flawed human being.
Right. Right. And in so many ways, the humility was extraordinary. And it was a real privilege to be accepted by the sisters. They accepted my healing gifts and sometimes would say, could you do this? Even though it wasn't their tradition, they invited me to pray with them, even though I'm not Catholic and they're not supposed to do that. And every time those little moments happened, I was like, holy mackerel, look at what's going on here. All the things that are supposed to be the boundaries, once they know who you are, they just, you're one of us. We want you here. We want this to work. I also think that everyone in the first world should spend a little bit of time in a third world dictatorship just to get your head straight.
That would be very interesting for many, 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 many people.
Right, right. When you're with crazy people with firearms who can do anything that they want to, and if they get mad at you, you will die. You really get refocused in your life.
I would think so. I would think so. You know, and it's that strikes what you're talking about is one of the things we need to do, or in my view, because, you know, who am I to dictate, that the rebuilding of community.
Right. Right. And also realize that that kind of terrorism and authoritarian control really does exist in many, many theme and variations and different levels of nuance in everyday life. That was, you know, it reminded me of the mob people that I knew in New York. I knew how they thought. I knew how the intimidation worked. And most people just, you know, try and sidestep and not look at it. And, oh, that's not really what the problem. Yeah, it is what the problem is. It's organized. It's intentional. It will do what it does unless you get out of the way or you stop it. If you're lucky, it doesn't touch your life a whole lot.
Again, going back to not resigning yourself that there has to be evil.
Right. Right. But also looking at the way it manifests and looking it straight in the eye. Looking it straight in the eye and saying, here's a problem. We need to do something with it. We can't allow this.
Right.
You know, whether it's an oil pipeline or any number of laws or groups or other things that used to function in the dark without anyone really confronting them because everyone was terrified. And at this point, we're talking about it and we're saying no.
Yeah, and I subscribed to a magazine called Yes. And they had a story about a tribal group in Ecuador, which I read somewhere is one of the most corrupt governments in South America. And the Ecuadorian government was trying to sell oil drilling rights on tribal-owned land. So it wasn't land the government even owned or had control of. And the tribe stood up and said, no. And actually sued the Ecuadorian government and won.
So I don't remember whether it was Ecuador or one of the other Central or South American countries, but one of them gave Mother Earth the rights of citizenship, said that it had to be considered a person in all events and negotiations, which is what the tribes were always saying.
No, obviously not Ecuador.
Probably not. But that's
but,
going
but
on.
That's the interesting kind of shift that I think is happening, you know, slowly here and there,
right,
where people are not resigning themselves, and I think starting to maybe even unconsciously look at the true balance of dark and light.
And that we are actors in that balance. So, and also people say balance and, well, we've got to have darkness to have the light and, you know, see the little balance scales. And no, we're, the more light we have, the less the darkness has any influence that may still be there and you need to know about it and deal with it and all the rest of it. But
assuming
the direction,
you're defining dark and light as good and evil.
Well, maybe. I mean, we are, the transition that we're going through, and you were talking about chaos being the place where all the change comes from. One of the ideas I heard a long time ago is that before every major transition, there's a period of chaos. Obviously, we're in the middle of that. And that the greater the chaos, the greater the coming transition. So we are in a period of very massive chaos. And hopefully that means that there is going to be this huge transition in which the darkness, the evil, the all of the stuff that feeds on human beings and on the Earth Mother will first lose traction and then slide off into the abyss and not be able to function. And then we're left with peace and love and cooperation, which we don't even really understand how it could exist and how we would live that way. We will have to learn. But that's the direction.
Yes, and I agree with you.
So when people accept that you got to have a little bit of this, you know, it's never going to go away. And I'm like, oh, hell no. When you say that, you allow it to exist. You say it will always exist. Your words have power. No.
Yes.
You know, it's the same way I've always said that fire and brimstone preachers that get up there and invoke the name of the one who shall not be named, are basically a satanic cult. Because what they do is stand in a sacred place and scream the name of Satan, which invokes him, which gives him power. They will never accept that. And I'm sure there are going to be some people listening to this that will get very upset that I said that. But
well, words have meaning. They have resonance. They have, they're not just, there's the word denotation, which is like just the strict meaning of the word, but then there's the connotation, which is the context, the meaning behind it. Again, the resonance and
the emotion.
When you put that energy out there.
And the emotion. And when you combine powerful emotions, in that case, fear and anger, doesn't really matter that you think you're not doing anything. You're still doing it.
Right.
And I've said that to several people that are clergy, and they just kind of sank back in their chairs and went, I never saw it that way, but you're absolutely right. Nobody should be doing that. So for some people that think that use that language, that's just another trick. You know, it's another way that people get tricked into giving that darkness power. And fear is the biggest one. We could get into a whole conversation about firearms and fear and killing and all kinds of other stuff. But, you know, there's a whole thread of if you get people scared enough, they will do something to protect themselves. And if lots of people die from that, as long as money is being made, nobody cares. And that's what it's about. It's about making money.
And being in power.
Well, that particular thread of the sales of military-style weapons in our country and how many there are.
You're right. It's about money. But we also equate money with power.
Right. Right. And indeed, a lot of money is going into the pockets of our easily corrupted legislators to allow all that to happen and make sure that it doesn't get changed.
Making it tough on the not so easily corrupted legislators.
Right. 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 And people who just say, you know, these are our citizens and we're responsible for protecting our citizens and this isn't working. So how are we going to make it work? Because people are dying. There's got to be a way to at least reduce the death toll. You know, one of the things I posted on Facebook, which I said only in a minor way in jest, is that we don't need to be attacked by a foreign country. We're killing each other in large numbers. If a foreign country was killing as many people as we are, as private citizens killing with these weapons, we would be out there stopping them. I don't get it. And you know, to me, that's a definition of evil. People die, and there's a story that we can tell about it that makes it somehow not okay that they died, but you can't do anything about it. Can't touch that.
Yeah, well, I've had this theory that the old order is clinging on tightly.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't want to give up to the new order.
Yeah, I have a friend who calls it the power that was.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and they are. They're one of the things about all of whatever you want to call it, all of that darkness, is that they're not real creative. They don't have new strategies. They're going to keep doing what they're doing in slight variations, but they're just going to keep doing what they're doing and push harder because now they're scared because there's a bright light shining on them and people are saying no. So they've got their backs up against the wall. So you're going to go through a period of craziness and difficulty, which we are already. And
yes, and I just keep envisioning we're coming out the other side.
Right. Right. You know, but we need to live within this apocalypse, this period of things being revealed and chaos.
And I think my strategy is to keep my eye on, you know, and I know I keep coming back to definitions, but that's part of, I think, having been a lawyer. How do we define it? We must define it clearly.
Right.
To keep my eye on the light and dark that I think is the true balance and what I can do to support that, the movement towards that.
Yes, absolutely. And it's incremental steps, and it's never letting up, not letting it recede again and not be talked about and not be pushed back. You know, all the things that are going on are things that in so many ways I remember my father talking about, that it was exactly the same stuff 100 years ago. The difference is the balance of power is shifting.
And the news media is full of just all the awful stuff. But if you pay attention to other threads,
right,
there's like there's a website called We Are Still In, or We Are All In. And it's about all the counties and the country, you know, in America, all the counties and cities and states and businesses. They're saying, no, we're working for, you know, to reverse climate change, despite, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all these movements that you can't just pay attention to, like, the main news. I mean, you should know what's going on, I think. I look at the Bing news feed in the morning and go, oh, that happened? I get the daily email from the Optimist Daily that tells, you know, like, there's a city in China that shortly, by 2020, I think, all 14,000 of its buses will be electric.
Right.
And so there's all these wonderful things are going on, and people are just, I live here in Vermont, and there's all these farmers, you know, it's like, younger people are becoming farmers again. There are actually farmers in New England who use draft power animals. They use horses and oxen to pull plows. And there's a big sustainability movement here. And you can Google it. There's these things called transition towns, which are working towards all this kind of stuff.
Right. Thank you for all those resources. And yes, there are all these wonderful things that don't get major attention. And I think also we need to understand that the climate change debate is mostly about people who have always attempted to get the maximum greedy money out of whatever they could in the short term without any looking at long-term consequences, which has gotten us to the place that we are now. And we couldn't have not done some of this stuff. Without coal, the Industrial Revolution would not have happened. All many changes in the world that are good would not have happened without coal and then with oil. It was a period that we had to go through. And
but
now
the time
we have,
is over.
The time is over. There are now alternatives. And that old guard, that old money, those organizations are saying, no, we're invested in this. We're going to keep going. They could just as easily go solar
and make a ton
of money.
In getting the Daily Optimist, Royal Dutch Shell, Dutch Royal Shell, whatever they call themselves.
Yes, Royal Dutch Shell,
is actually investing in wind turbines in the North Sea.
All right.
You know, the head of some big oil company, I think in England, some big oil company like Royal Dutch Shell again, his next car is going to be an electric car.
Yep.
So it's like, even the companies know, you know, that
right.
it's not happening. the coal jobs aren't coming back.
Yeah.
It's just not.
The coal jobs are not coming back, and that whole thing is a scam. And a way to attempt to squeeze the last bit they can out of fossil fuels and keep the competing new technologies from getting any traction. It's not going to work.
Because the power companies are doing it on their own. They're turning
right.
away from coal. You know,
right. And partly because other fuels are less expensive. It's just the economics of it.
Mm-hmm. But
yes, it's very interesting. And between the lack of coverage in the quote unquote mainstream media and the amount of media that is fake news, that is distorted news, you really have to search out the alternative thread of good stuff that's out there. So thank you for bringing up all those resources for people to look at that stuff. It's good stuff going on. It's just,
you have to look for that,
right, and it's going to be chaotic for a while. It's going to be crazy for a while.
And there are days that I read every little story that they send me a link, and there are some days I just look at the first paragraph and go, oh, okay.
Right, and then there are the days I throw my hands up and go, I can't read anymore. No. This is, yeah. So, yeah, absolutely.
So I think one of the things that I sort of feel is that help the balance in the world is to maintain balance in ourselves.
Right. Which is a whole other topic we should do the next time you're on, because as always happens, we're running out of time.
Oh, rats.
Because we have so much to bounce off of each other, and it's so much fun doing that. Thanks so much for suggesting this. This has been a wonderful conversation. I hope people have had food for thought with all of this.
Run screaming out of the room.
Well, you know, yeah. I can't say the show is ever for everybody. So again, thank you so much. My guest tonight is Catherine Samuelson. And you want to do your quick blurb and tell people your website again?
KatherineSamuelson.com, and it's KatherineSamuelson.com.
And you do angel readings, and you have an incredible book, and they should go check all of it out. And you're a life coach,
yes.
Applying all of that as well. So, and just a really smart lady who's got some great ideas, and I enjoy your company and I enjoy doing this. So thanks so much for being on the show again.
Well, thank you. And I enjoy your company as well.
Thank you. And we'll have to have lunch again before the snow flies, if we can manage to work that out.
Yes.
So for those of you out there that might be listening and saying, who is this guy, David? And what in the world does he do? You can go to househealing.com. There's all kinds of ways to get in touch, plus a link to schedule a 20-minute free phone conversation where we can look at a person, place, situation, business, whatever it might be, and see if my work can be helpful to you. If you want more about the show, it's hiding in plain view at thefarkasfiles.com. And we've been doing this, as I said, for 7 years. So there are hundreds of incredible conversations with wonderful people. So check that out. And the easiest way to listen to all that and sort it all out is to use the Empower Radio app, which comes in flavors for both kinds of smartphones. And that lets you just look up one of the shows. And there are shows all day. There are amazing programs on Empower Radio. If you are only familiar with the Farkas Files, check out the rest of them. And you can just click on the show and it will bring up the archive, and you'll see all of the various shows that you can choose from. We're also on all the streaming media, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, iTunes Podcasts, all of those as well. So whenever you can listen, wherever you can listen. It's really easy now, much easier than it was when we started all this. So again, thank you all for listening. It's what makes it worthwhile. Otherwise, I would just be sitting here by myself ranting. And that would be a little strange. So it's good to have an audience. People don't think you're crazy if you have an audience. Well, they might anyway, but it's good to have an audience. So thank you so much for being here and sharing some of your time. Thank you one and all for being here. And until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week. We'll be right back.